Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. I want to welcome our listeners back to this week's episode of Evolving to Exceptional. We have Wendy White with us today. She is the CEO of Face It Together. She has been with that organization or been the CEO of that organization since 2020 and really focused on the challenges that workplaces are facing with respect to addiction and how to combat a lot of those challenges. Wendy spent most of her career working in the healthcare industry and has now pivoted into this really amazing role that Face It Together and mission that Face It Together has for helping to transform workplaces and provide workplaces and the people within them the support that they need to navigate what can be one of the biggest challenges people face in their entire lives, that of addiction. So Wendy, I would love for you to tell us just a little more about yourself, your background, and why it is you do what you do and what it is that you guys do at Face It Together.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate being here. It's a pleasure to be able to share more about our organization. So Face It Together, we do one-on-one peer coaching for drug and alcohol addiction for those with addiction, but we also have special programming for loved ones. I spent nearly 20 years in healthcare. A great majority of that was in healthcare IT, and certainly recognize the value of data and being able to show the value and the outcomes of the work that we're doing. And so that was one of the things that intrigued me when I was looking at potentially working at Face It Together. We are very science and data driven. And so we're really focused on the person as a whole, being able to show the positive impact that we have on individuals. And there isn't that focus on the substance itself. The coaching sessions are not spent talking about the substance, but instead working on different areas of that person's life. So we have individuals take assessments initially and then every 30 days. And then being through that, being able to show that positive outcome and improvement in individuals.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into this space. What was your journey to serve this part of the population in this particular workplace challenge specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. Being part of healthcare, you are there because you want to help the patient and the person. And I've actually always had a supporting role in healthcare. And I wanted to get a little bit closer to helping individuals. I myself had my own struggles with alcohol the last year of my working at a healthcare system. I was using alcohol to cope with the stress of my job. So not that I would not have the stereotypical addiction story, and I practice harm reduction. We can talk about that more in a little bit, but I would also went on a weight loss journey. So I'm on a weight loss journey and I kept telling myself, okay, this next month, I'm not going to drink. And then I would have a really bad day and I would come home and I would drink a bottle of wine, maybe two, depending on how bad that bad day was. And I just was not, I wasn't the person that I knew I could be. So obviously you drink that much the night before, you're not as productive of an individual the next day. It was impacting my work, impacting my family. I have four children. And then came to a point where I had my son came forward, my youngest son, and he wanted to put on a little show for my husband and I. And normally I would have been like, oh, later, buddy, I'm going to finish the glass of wine. I've got work I got to do, whatever it might be. But I actually took the time that night and my son talked about it for weeks afterwards. And so I knew that I needed to make a change. And so that change is I left the organization I was working for and I started working for Face It Together. I love the concepts around their approach or our approach now to addiction care, where it is wherever someone is at on that journey. So where I was not drinking every day, not drinking necessarily to blacking out or any of those things on a regular basis, but certainly that alcohol was impacting my life. So we work with people in that pre-contemplation. I don't think I have a healthy relationship. I don't think this is well to people that have hit proverbial rock bottom. Like we work with anybody, in between, from someone homeless on the street to an executive at an organization. We create a space that is warm and inviting and holds a lot of dignity and respect for those that we serve.
I love that you talked about that, because I think the stigma of addiction is that homeless image, person with a brown bag on the street type of image when it comes to addiction, or someone in the throngs of some type of heroin or really serious addiction. And certainly that plagues our country as well, and there are challenges there. But there's also this whole functional addiction arena, and individuals that get pulled into addiction because of true pain that translates into becoming addicted to those painkillers or that substitute for pain, and individuals that functioning, that appear to be functioning professionals, running businesses, lawyers in the courtroom, doing jobs every day, that may have a hard time seeing their actions or their circumstances falling into this space, or falling into the space of needing some degree of support, or even causing negative outcomes or negative fallout because of those actions or because of those behaviors. What is it, some of what with addiction challenges in the workplace? Where do you see these manifesting and people needing this kind of support?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways. Our organization was founded on the premise that employers really bear the greatest brunt of the cost of addiction. And so whether that's coming from a person who is struggling themselves with addiction or as a loved one, just extrapolating off of my story, and certainly there are people that have gone farther down that road than I did, we want to catch people earlier in that process so we can get them the right supports and get them on the right path. But it causes a lot of impact in terms of increased absenteeism, increased healthcare costs, just being distracted at work, not being their best self. We also have programming for loved ones, which is very unique. Our program does not require that the person in their life that is struggling with addiction seeks services, either with us or with someone else. A loved one can come, even if the person in their life is very active in their addiction. We focus on that wellness of the loved one and helping get them the right tools in their toolbox. And so as a loved one, you're have those same impacts where you're stressed. Stress has a huge impact on the body. So increased healthcare costs, just being distracted, that people are wondering, where is my son, my husband, my wife, my daughter, whoever it might be in their life? Where are they at? Are they safe? They're just distracted. Or they might not have slept well, probably didn't sleep well. One of my coworkers tells stories of sleeping on the floor in front of her son's bedroom door to keep him from sneaking out at night. So certainly not quality sleep, and that does not make her a stellar employee in the morning. And part of our goal with working with employers is to change the conversation around addiction. So people are shameful. There's so much stigma, as you talked about. And so people don't want to talk about it. And wanting to create in a culture in a workplace where addiction is treated no different than any other disease, where people can at least rally around that individual and help provide support. And so by changing the culture in workplaces, giving the space for people to come forward, to be able to seek help, our services are confidential and HIPAA compliant, but that's still, people can still be nervous about that. They don't want there to be negative consequences for having reached out for support. And being able, it's not just us sharing that message of it being secure and confidential and HIPAA compliant, but it also has to come from the organization to create that environment, that safe space, so people are comfortable coming forward and seeking help.
So tell me, I think that's so helpful. And one thing I really love about your organization is that support that it gives to the families, to people that are around the people with addiction. Because I think you're right, there is a lot of stress that comes with navigating and managing through addiction. I myself have been have had challenges in my family with addiction, as well as relationships in my past where I've been with an addict. And the even when they're in recovery, so even when they're not actively using, there is still a lot of added stress and relationship dynamics and challenges in place, especially if they aren't getting ongoing support or if there isn't any support. So what are some of the things, the benefits that exist for family members of people who are struggling with addiction? And I'll use, and I want to use addiction really loosely there, because I think you used the term of problem drinking before, of not necessarily that you're fully addicted, but that your drinking is so prevalent so much or so often that it is interfering with your ability to really be present or have relationships with people in your life, or is having some sort of negative impact there, even if it's not what you would consider a full-blown addiction. What are some of the things that you do to support those that are in that situation, that are loved ones of those folks?
Yeah, absolutely. We have been trying to incorporate, especially when talking with employers and employees, talking about that problem drinking concept, just because that is, alcohol is just so pervasive in society and just so accepted, and getting people to recognize that even though alcohol is legal and all of the things that come with it, that it can still have a negative impact without hitting that stereotype of addiction. And from a loved one perspective, there's just a ton of bad advice out in the general population when it comes to loved ones, that if a person in their life is struggling with addiction, they're told that they need to let them hit rock bottom. They need to disconnect. They need to disengage. And one, that isn't helpful. And two, it doesn't have to be that way. There's ways to help and support individuals while still doing that in a healthy way, both for the loved one and for the person in their life. And so our program helps get individuals those right tools. So how tools to set healthy boundaries, how to promote and be an example of change. A lot of times the conversations come from a very negative space. It's a lot of nagging and judging and shameful reactions just because it's so embedded in our culture. And so helping loved ones get different approaches to those communications, to be able to have that communication in a more positive way while still setting those boundaries for themselves so that they can focus on their own wellness. The other piece, it's like the oxygen mask analogy, that you have to take care of yourself before you take care of someone else. And so also helping those loved ones with their coping skills, oftentimes we'll revert to those maybe not so healthy approaches to try to cope with that. And so being able to talk through that and give them the support around approaching it from a healthy perspective. And we have a lot of anecdotal stories of where loved ones have engaged with us. They get these tools in their toolbox. They start having those different conversations. One loved one member tells the story and states, I got time with my son that I never had. I had a relationship with my son that I was never able to have before when I started having that conversation differently. And so being able to create that, and then often it does motivate that individual to either engage with us, go to treatment, whatever that looks like for them. But being able to come at it with a place of care and compassion just helps both individuals in that situation.
That's such a powerful way to give people kind of the toolkit or the tool set that they need to be able to navigate something that we don't learn how to navigate on our own. It is just something you find yourself in. And then when you do, you're challenged with, how do I respond? How do I deal with? And there's a lot of, when it comes to problem drinking or, and especially addiction, behaviors that come with that, that aren't necessarily directly the result of the addiction itself, but they come along with it. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those challenges are that people might be facing and needing support in, either the addict or the family members of the addicts?
Yes, it really applies to both populations, but particularly for persons with addiction. I mentioned our assessments, and those are really looking at people's personal, social, and cultural capital. So it's ranging really all aspects of someone's life, like how connected are they with their family or their community? How's their employment, their health, their housing, Are they spiritual? Are they getting the right spiritual fulfillment that they're looking for? Lots of different things. And so we have them take that assessment initially, and then we can identify the low. It's not a diagnostic tool. It's really individual. Okay. So where are those low scores at? And then the conversations in the coaching room are about goals around those areas that need improvement. And it might be the coach sitting down with the individual and connecting them with a primary care provider. Maybe they've never gotten a primary care provider, or it's connecting them to another community resource that supports employment or housing or whatever that might look like for them. But being able to put that individualized plan around that person's wellness. Addiction or substance use is often a symptom of other things going on in someone's life, and getting them the support and help for the areas that they're struggling then helps with the either reducing or eliminating the use of that substance.
That's, I think that's so helpful to think about the last part of what you said, where addiction is often the result of something that happened or something that's going on with a person. And so is it maybe more of a symptom than a problem in and of itself, that there's something more going on for people that probably needs addressing, and the addiction is just their way of coping with whatever that underlying challenge is?
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely say that's true, whether it is oftentimes we'll see co-occurring situations with mental health needs and addiction. So getting them connected to the right medical support therapist to work through those challenges or childhood trauma, whatever it may have been that they experienced. Or it could be like in my situation, I just was in a really stressful situation that I wasn't able to cope with. And that was what I was turning to. And helping get people the right tools to be able to address those pieces then helps make that process easier.
So how do you go about implementing these services into workplaces? If people are interested in it, how does it work to give this access to this type of support, and what gets put in place for people who participate?
Yeah. So we, again, recognizing that this cost of addiction is really high for employers, providing this as an employee benefit. So if an employer signs on, then their employees and their family members can get unlimited coaching as that benefit. So an employer would pay an annual fee for those, that benefit for those services. And then along with that, we do provide education to leadership and whoever is involved that could be having those conversations. We participate in benefit fairs to help spread the word. And really, some of the most simple things are the most effective, like just having regular email communications out to the team so that they begin to hear the message over and over again. I always say today might not mean anything to that individual, but 6 months from now, their spouse or their child or their parent, they are recognizing signs that are not positive, and or maybe within themselves, like all of a sudden something happened. Maybe they had an event in their life that just changed things for them, and just repeatedly getting that message out. And the most effective or the best way to change that culture is to really have leadership in the organization. If they have a personal story, that's fabulous. Not everybody has that, but being able to share their personal story, but just having an environment where leadership is talking about it in an open and honest way helps break down those barriers and helps get people well, helps people be more productive and just have a more connected life.
So what can workplaces do to really help to make it safe for people to want to take advantage of that? Now, I know you talked about being HIPAA compliant and trying to provide those protections, but I imagine it's still challenging sometimes to get people to that point. What are some of the things that workplaces can do?
Yeah, I think one area, and I haven't spent a lot of time talking, but when you recognize that there may be an issue. So we also work with employers in situations where maybe they had a safety event or there was suspicion of drug or alcohol use. And so they have done drug testing on the individual and identified that they were under the influence at work. We can work with those employers so that they don't have to terminate. Often that's the answer. Oh, this happened, so now you're fired. We can be an alternative to that, where instead they can agree to engage with us for a period of time, 3 months, 6 months, And then we would sign a release of information between us and the employer, but only to release that, yes, this employee attended sessions on these dates. It's not that we would share any of the communications from the coaching room, but just that, yes, they followed through on their engagement with us. And I think it's creating that environment that isn't punitive, but instead supportive, creating an environment where the conversation is, how can I support you, instead of trying to punish them for what appears to be a bad decision. And the other piece I meant to mention earlier, when we're just talking about the person as a whole, that there is definitely instances where individuals have eliminated a substance from their life, but they're still miserable. And so it's super important to provide that overall support and being able to address all of those areas, because it's, again, you need to address that underlying problem. You want to make the person's life better. And you have to do that by looking at the whole person.
So what are some of the results that you get? So as people participate, what are some of the benefits that the workplaces you've worked with have seen as a result of making this investment, of giving their employees this benefit? Do you give them any sort of update as an employer on how things are going and if it's making a difference? How does that kind of work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we would, all of the areas that we look at on our assessments, and there's 68 questions, so there's a lot of data. And so we'll look at that and show what's the percent change, or even their overall score. We'll look at a percent change. So we try to see at least a 10% increase in the assessments. And I think we're usually more around 15%, give or take, increase in scores. So we would share that with the employer to show what was the overall improvement in the people that have engaged score. And then I think some of the other benefits, we have had some employers where they've worked with their insurance companies, where if they have like a wellness program, they can use this as part of that wellness program to help have a discount on the cost of their healthcare for their employees and employee family members. So using that component, and then again, being able to reduce turnover, because you're not terminating someone when an event happens, but instead helping them to live a healthier life. And then I think in the end, you end up with greater engagement because you've shown that you cared about that individual and you wanted the best for them. And so you get better engagement from those staff, plus reduce the cost of all that turnover.
The benefits seem to be so significant, right? I'm curious if you have, and maybe you know this off of your top of your head, maybe you don't, but what are some of the statistics, or what is some of the data around how many people a workplace might likely have in their organization that is suffering with addiction, or of family members that are suffering, that are having that impact or creating that impact?
Yeah. So it varies quite a bit by industry. There is a tool out on the National Safety Council's website. There is an addiction cost calculator that anyone can go out. It's a free tool out on the web. And you indicate your industry, how many employees, and what state you are in. And it will calculate out the estimated impact by both those with addiction and loved ones, and then also your costs around like healthcare, turnover, all of those pieces. So that tool is available. I can say that in the general population, there are about 10% of the population struggles with addiction. And then for every person with addiction, there's 3 to 4 loved ones that are directly impacted by that person's addiction. And so then therefore also impacted, right, being able to be that productive employee. And I think somewhere around 70% of those with addiction are employed. And so I think, again, going back to our earlier conversation where everybody pictures that homeless person on the street as the one with addiction, does not see socioeconomic status. When you look at that statistic of 70% of those with addiction are employed, that's a large chunk of people that could use that additional support, and then extend that to loved ones, and it's obviously even greater.
Yeah. Well, I think what is interesting to me as I reflect on addiction in particular, we give it a category because of its shared source, right? Addiction to a substance that has the negative effect or impact on your life that is impacting you in some way. And I think about what is happening in those scenarios to people, especially through our kind of neuroperformance or neuroscience lens of people operating in a fight or flight, freeze state pretty frequently. So if you are living with someone with an addiction, you are either constantly afraid that they're going to relapse or what they're going to do or what's going to happen. And as a result, you find yourself vacillating between, am I going to get into a fight and an argument? Am I going to be having to run away from this situation? Am I going to be just frozen in which I think happens a lot of the times where you end up just in a frozen, disassociated, I'm going to take it kind of state. And so what that does is really wears down people's nervous systems and wears down their ability to tolerate that stress and that strain, which is why I think sometimes there's this ripple effect of you have the core person, but then others around them who have to figure out how to cope with the person with the addiction. And so then they develop their own coping mechanisms. It may not always be a substance like alcohol or, but it can be things like excess working or busyness or substituting for sugar or something else that can fill that space, that can fill up the feeling of pain that gets experienced in those different scenarios. And we know that no matter where a person goes, they take their body with them, right? So their body goes with them. So if they're having that experience at home, like you said, they're most certainly bringing it with them into the workplace, and it's going to put them into a suboptimal working performance from a performance standpoint, from a results standpoint. What have you seen in terms of workplaces really appreciating the results that they've gotten or what they've seen as a result of this experience?
Yeah, I think certainly being able to create that supportive environment instead of terminating people, I think being able to have a tool to be able to offer individuals instead of expecting them to maybe flounder on their own, but being able to give them a tool in those situations. I also, sometimes some of those conversations, I'm going opposite direction of your question, but when we first have conversations with employers, it often takes, not often, but sometimes it takes some convincing. People are often with the mindset, oh, it's not at our workplace. It's not, we don't have that problem here. That's not true. There's so many people are impacted. So many people have their own personal story. But again, it's because people aren't sharing that people don't recognize that. And so sometimes it just takes some explaining or bringing forward some good stories around that to be able to get people to understand. And I think particularly in areas where there's a lot of safety concerns, it's important to be able to have those resources. So like a construction company or something along those lines where there is a lot of risk involved. And then there's also a lot of industries where just inherently there's maybe more access. The restaurant industry, they have a higher incidence as well, and being able to provide that support.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point there, and I can see how that might be difficult to convince, right? To understand the impact or its prevalence in a space. And I think that's in large part due to people coming into the workplace wanting to put their best foot forward, wanting to have it all together or have things figured out, and not wanting to be maybe negatively impacted by admitting the very real life things that we all experience, and nobody really escapes them entirely. And I also wonder too if the understanding of how much those things are impacting people, of really understanding if people are in a dysregulated nervous system state the entire time they're working, how much that is wearing down and impacting their performance, their interactions, how easily they're able to collaborate with other people, how much they affect the people around them, because we know that when people are dysregulated, they will dysregulate the people that are with them, that they will pull them into a dysregulated state. And so it can have far-reaching consequences beyond just the individual being impacted themselves. And I'm not sure that, I think there's a lot of new research in the space talking about how our brain waves sync together, how our heart waves will sync together when we're working together, when we're operating together. And so when you take somebody who's under that level of stress and you put them in a work environment with other people, it's almost impossible for them not to impact the people around them, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I think also part of that convincing individuals that it could be a bigger problem than maybe they recognize is because so many people hold that belief that you don't have a problem until you've hit rock bottom. So if you are, you know, still working, you're married, you still have your house, you have all of quote unquote perfect life, you don't have a problem. And that isn't necessarily true. And I think we could prevent a lot of things from happening by getting people the help that they need sooner in that process before they have had all of those things happen to them. And so it's changing that stigma around what people believe addiction or even problem drinking looks like.
And I think a lot of workplace cultures, or at least in my past, they did circled around drinking as the social activity. And interestingly, when I got pregnant with, I think it was my son, either my son or my daughters, I can't remember. But when I got pregnant, people were already suspicious that I was pregnant because I wasn't drinking like I normally would. And so it like immediately the rumors were spreading and people were speculating before like I had even told and I'd even gone public with it. And then I actually ended up giving up drinking about a year and a half ago. Just, I call it sober curious, just to see. But people will automatically jump to the conclusion that I must have had a problem if I stopped drinking, or I must have had an issue, because drinking is such a systemic part of our culture that simply saying, you know what, I don't actually feel better when I drink. Like it makes me, I have autoimmune conditions. I get inflamed really easily. I don't feel good. I feel really bad. So it's not fun for me. So I just opted out. Yeah. It's like mind blowing to people that you would just opt out or just choose not to participate. And so I think there's some stigma there too of helping to create a culture where the social aspect or the way that people interact or have relationships doesn't have to center around those things as well.
Yeah, we have done several webinars around like holiday parties and just like corporate events and being able to talk through alternatives and how to approach those situations. If your employer does have an open bar at an event, like how you can go about approaching that in a healthy way. But working with employers to either not provide it for free or do drink tickets to at least limit the access. And then we've tried to even brainstorm a little bit around some creative ideas around that, where, you know, some people probably have that expectation, right? I'm going to go to this holiday party and I'm going to be able to drink all night. But are there alternatives that you could put a positive spin on eliminating that drinking? So is it, instead of providing alcohol at this event, we're going to donate money to these three charities. Pick the charity of your event, your choice that you would like your drinks to go to. So being able to do some creative things to help put it in a more positive light. And it is, when you start to really pay attention to how pervasive alcohol is, it like blows your mind. I think one of the, I'm going off a little bit, but even in a lot of children's movies and things, there are references to alcohol. One of my favorites is, it's a Pixar Disney movie, The Incredibles, but both one and two, they have Mr. Incredible is having mimosas on the plane on his way to the island. And then in Incredibles 2, Elastigirl is handed a drink after a long day. So it is just embedded in how we think. You have a bad day, you have a drink. And we also spend a lot of time focusing on harm reduction. So it isn't that we require anybody to be substance free when they engage with us. We never turn anyone away if they have had a reoccurrence of symptoms. But one of the things that we do work with individuals is just being more mindful around that drinking. And so being able to think about, and this is definitely what I practice. Okay, why am I having this drink? Is it because I just had a bad day? Okay, then no, I'm not going to have the drink tonight. But I just having this meal and I think a glass of wine would go well with it, then I'll have a glass of wine. But I work on being very mindful and don't do it just blindly without thinking about why I'm drinking. And then, sorry, another thing, just back on the supporting individuals, going to an event, if you are nervous, so maybe you have eliminated drinking from your life and you're going to a work event, having a safe friend, a buddy with you that you can have even a safe word or a safe sentence, and that then they can help get you out of the situation if you're uncomfortable. Even maybe just putting a time limit, I'm going to go, but I'm going to leave in 1 hour, so that you can try to reduce or eliminate some of that pressure or temptation. So those are the types of strategies too that our coaches would work on in the coaching room. Maybe it's not an employer event. It's you have the holidays coming up and you're going to be with your family. And so what strategies can you use in that situation? And that's a lot of what can be discussed in the coaching room and kind of talked through too, if that's a concern for individuals.
I think that's so helpful and so powerful. And it really, for me, it resonated in a couple of ways. One is, in my family, we grew up with cocktail hour being part of the family experience. And as kids, we got kiddie cocktails, referring to your Disney movie example there, right? We would have our kiddie cocktails with our cherry juice and 7-Up. And when I had my kids, I wanted to create something different. I didn't want cocktail hour to be a part of the family traditions. Like, I didn't want that to be the thing that they remembered is, oh, all the adults are getting drunk now, or they're starting, like, now they can finally relax. I didn't want that to be a shift in time or a known thing. And I think for a long time throughout our history, alcohol is the way to maybe, like you said, deal with stressful day or a long day. And to me, that screams, again, back to nervous system dysregulation. It screams to me, okay, I've been under stress. I don't feel good. I feel out of whack. I'm going to have this drink to calm me down, to bring me down to a more relaxed state. And so theoretically, you're trying to instigate or bring in your parasympathetic nervous system, the part of your system that brings you into a calmer state. What's really exciting today or nowadays is there are so many other tools in our toolbox for how to deal with that dysregulated nervous system, for how to engage in a way that creates the result that the alcohol might create for you, but by using breathing practices or using vagal nerve stimulation devices, or my favorite is the Apollo Neuro that you can wear around your wrist that regulates your nervous system both during the day and at night to help keep you more in a balance, to help keep you from getting into that overstressed, dysregulated state. I've got a cold plunge that I do periodically to bring me back to re-regulate my nervous system. But there's so many tools that we have now that we can use to create an effect rather than using the alcohol that has alcohol or other substances that have some of the so many negative side effects associated with them.
Yes, for sure. Along those same lines, we have several members and a couple that sit on our board where they were using alcohol to cope with their anxiety. It's the chicken or the egg. Is the alcohol helping to cope with the anxiety, or is the anxiety being caused by the alcohol? And so you end up in this circle. And we do get feedback, bringing it back to employers a little bit, where their employers are, they'll make statements, oh, we want an overall mental health solution and not something so focused on addiction. I think there can be a case made that alcohol impacts a lot of overall mental health. And so being able to support that in an effective way, not saying that's everybody's story,
right.
There is a lot of people where I think by eliminating or reducing the substances in their life, it will then improve their mental health. Not discrediting the need for a good therapist or anything, depending on what you're working through, but it certainly can exacerbate the situation.
And I love that you guys have those coaches that are working with individuals given their specific situation, right? So it's their experience rather than a generic program or a generic everybody goes through these 6 steps or these 7 things or whatever, because everybody's situation is so unique. And it might be problem drinking, it might be something much more severe, it could be a whole spectrum of different situations. So getting to the root of that challenge so that you can navigate it, I think, is really powerful. The other thing you made me think of is how often when we talk about performance in the workplace, and we talk about that often workplaces stop at behavior. How do we change this behavior that a person's doing? And beneath that behavior is the thinking, the feeling, the emotions, but then ultimately their physiology. And in some cases, or I would guess in a lot of cases, the addiction is the behavioral manifestation of something that is deeper rooted, right? Like we talked about earlier, there's usually something that's causing someone to want to engage in that activity. For example, pain is a huge source of addiction, right? People experience very real pain. I had a family friend a number of years ago who had been addicted to pain meds for so many years. He ultimately ended up taking his own life. He was a doctor and he just was in so much pain. And so often I think we have to really work with people to get to those deep rooted challenges, those deeper rooted issues to solve them, or the outcome is inevitable. And the other thing I think from a workplace standpoint is those same things that are creating the addiction outcome are probably also impacting workplace interactions, impacting how reactive they are to other people, all the things that come into play in terms of how they're performing in the workplace as well.
Oh, for sure. And you think about even as a loved one, if you're not getting good sleep or you are, we talked a little bit about unhealthy coping skills, like whatever those pieces are, that does certainly impact then how you interact with others. It doesn't always allow you to bring your best foot forward. You're going to be a little bit more reactive, certainly not always having the best reaction. And so being able to help cope with those things can certainly help as well.
Absolutely. So Wendy, I have so enjoyed having you come on and tell us all about Face It Together, such an amazing organization. I love what you guys are doing. Any final thoughts for our audience as we wrap up this episode? Any words of wisdom or insights you want to share as we draw this to a close?
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about our employer program, which is super important. And I think really helps to change the conversation around addiction. But we are here to help anybody, regardless of whether they are tied to an employer that has engaged with us. But so going out to our website, you can click on our Get Started button. Our website is wefaceittogether.org. So we're here to help any person with addiction or any loved one that is interested in seeking help. And then we really take our time to make sure we get people connected to the right coach. And through that onboarding process, individuals would meet with a first impressions team member to get a good understanding of their story and where they're coming from. And then from there, doing their baseline assessments, getting them connected with the right coach. And then we have processes to ensure that we got it right, that we have them with the right person. But it's really, I haven't talked a lot about really that power of the peer. And so that is also fundamentally what makes our program different than other addiction care organizations. And so it's being able to have an individual that can say, I've been there, I've done that, I've experienced something similar. And so being able to create that safe space in the coaching room to eliminate that shame and stigma. We often, if people do have a reoccurrence of symptoms or a relapse, we have a lot of instances where the only person they've told is their coach, and then their coach can help get them back on track again. But without that safe space to be able to share that information, it's easy for that to just snowball into a bigger problem than what it needed to be. So, but being able to use that peer, our peers are highly trained and they're certified, again, using those science-based principles to help get people well.
I love that. I love everything you do. We will put your website in the show notes to point folks there to check you guys out. If you are struggling with addiction, if you are a family member of someone struggling with addiction, if you're not sure if you are a family member of someone struggling with addiction, reach out to them, get some support, figure out how to navigate these challenges differently. They are impacting your life, your physical health, your mental health, your performance, your workplaces. They're going to impact everything. So I highly encourage you to reach out to Wendy White and her team at Face It Together and get that support that you need. I always like to remind our listeners, as always, just remember to keep evolving, keep growing, keep looking for those opportunities to rewire your neural pathways so you can have more exceptional experiences on your life journey. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll be back again next week with another episode.